What's Iran doing in Iraq? And is ISIS metastasizing around the globe? All that, we're going to talk about it, coming up on today's Hot Zone.
This is the Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Well, folks, it's another beautiful day out here on the farm, as you can see, and I'm here making you another podcast. I just want to take a minute, though, and let you know how much I appreciate all of you who are supporting the podcast, especially on Patreon. Those of you who have really stepped up and joined forces with me and with the podcast to try to do some good around the globe. And as I go and I bring you the news of the wars and disasters I'm covering, it really encourages me. Frankly, I'm just really humbled. And I want y'all to know I'm keeping track of your generosity and I'm using it to continue to help the people that I've been reporting to you. Here's one example. These two girls from Venezuela, Jessica and her sister Oris, were helped back in April to move from the border region in Cucuta, where they were living on the street. We got them a bus ticket and sent them to a city called Pereira on the other side of Colombia, where they had some relatives that they could live with. Now that was step one. Then we sent them a little more money to help them get a better place of their own, and now we're helping them seek work permits that will actually let them get real jobs and really get on their feet. We also gave them some money to go see their kids. Now, this other mother, Catherine, has been working as a porter, and she had to leave her kids unsupervised, playing out in the street while she was working. But with your help, we got her set up with her own little business, and so now she can stay where she is and sell things and stay with her kids. Bottom line, you guys are making a difference with your contributions to the podcast, so I really want to say thanks. In a few weeks, I'm going to head to Afghanistan, and I'll be over there for a couple weeks. And there's a whole lot more happening on the ground in Afghanistan than you probably know about, because the media really hasn't been paying a lot of attention to it. But with 15,000 U.S. troops on the ground, I think we ought to know. So I'm going to go spend some time with those guys and bring you the scoop from on the ground. One of the greatest things is I'm going to get to see my son. All right, let's talk about what's happening in Iraq right now. The Iranians have been busy trying to strengthen their grip on that country, as we've reported to you a bunch. And you have to remember that Iran is Shia Muslim, and everything south of about Kirkuk in Iraq is also Shia. So there's an affinity there. North of Kirkuk is Kurdistan, and then west of that is Sunni, Yazidi, Turkmen, Assyrian Christians, Chaldeans, Druze, and a whole bunch of others. There's a bit of generalization in all that, but it helps to understand that Shia-Sunni divide especially. Those people are not friends. So we heard about a credible threat coming from Iran a few weeks ago. We talked to Eric Stackelbeck about that in episode 112. We saw some drone strikes on Saudi Arabian oil facilities, and some of their ships were hit and targeted. We started moving aircraft carriers from the United States into the Gulf, and there's been a lot of harsh words going back and forth between the U.S. and Iran. Then the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad started pulling their people out of there and leaving only the essential emergency staff. Now, Coalition Major General Chris Gaika says there's no increased threat from the provisional military units in Iraq. Check this out.
So we've seen no change in the posture or the laydown of the PMF. And of course, the PMF is a moniker for a very broad range of groups. So I think it's important to say that many of them are compliant, and we have seen, as I say, no change in their posture since the recent exchange between the United States and Iran. And we hope and expect that will continue.
There's been talking about the threat that they potentially pose to coalition troops.
Am I concerned about the danger? No, not really. We take a range of force protection measures for operating in this part of the world against a whole range of threats. And we review them regularly. We've reviewed them, obviously, in the light of the events of the last week or so. You wouldn't expect me to go into what they are in detail, but we find them completely satisfactory, and we don't intend to change them and our escalation process within them.
Okay, but I want you to understand that PMUs are not the only Iranian threat in Iraq. Now, those units are owned pretty much by Iran, but last week the State Department issued the security alert to non-essentials in Baghdad and Erbil, specifically because of another threat in Iran. They recommended that people depart Iraq by commercial transportation as soon as they can, avoid U.S. facilities within Iraq, and to monitor local media for updates, check out their security plans, and remain aware of their surroundings, like you wouldn't be anyway if you were over there. There was an earlier security alert also on May 12th, which advised all U.S. citizens about the tensions between Iraq and Iran and the United States, told everybody to remain vigilant, and recommended against traveling to Iraq. That's good advice. Probably not a good place to go on vacation right now. Then Sunday night, a rocket was fired from Baghdad into the Green Zone. Now, what is the Green Zone exactly? Well, it's where the U.S. Embassy is. That's the most important thing. And so a rocket landing there, does that mean the general was wrong when he said the PMUs were not a threat? No, not necessarily. Back on episode 64, I interviewed Anne Spicard, and she was in Baghdad when that missile came in. She wrote an article for the Daily Beast that says a senior Iraqi official told her the rocket was fired by Iranian-backed Hezbollah, which makes the case that Iran is testing America by a series of pinprick attacks trying to provoke us. Now, I don't know about that, but because what would be the end game for them there? U.S. intel agencies reportedly knew about that threat in Iraq and even knew about Iranian-backed forces moving missiles around bases where U.S. forces are housed. Apparently, when Mike Pompeo went over there last week, he asked the Iraqi government to rein in those PMUs. So I guess you could say that the British generals just was doing what generals are supposed to do when they go give a press briefing, just not give anything away and tell the press something without giving anything away. But I guess it remains to be seen whether what's going to happen between the U.S. and Iran. But one thing we do know is that Iraq's going to be a point of friction between the two countries in the process of finding out. So Iran desperately wants to control what happens there in Iraq and likely sees everything happening in Iraq as part of a proxy conflict against the United States. So maybe it is, maybe it's not. But for his part, I think Trump's mostly doing the right thing by talking tough and being willing to back it up with force if he has to. I think if Iran doubts Trump's willingness to let the missiles fly, they might find that to be a costly miscalculation, because I think he'd do it if he felt like he needed to. Now, let's move on and talk about ISIS for a little bit. I think it's pretty well established that the cancerous tumor, so to speak, that was the Islamic State Caliphate in Iraq and Syria has been cut out and removed. But nobody really thinks the cancer's been defeated. Since the terror group is now essentially back to being an insurgency, they're doing their best to spread their ideology, continue spreading it, around the globe on the internet and elsewhere, and they're having some success at that. We've talked about many of these hot zones before. ISIS attacks on churches in Nigeria, Burkina Faso, attacks in Kenya, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, Libya, Europe, and even the United States. They seem to be really good at turning disaffected and lonely Muslim men into lone wolves, and also in sort of franchising their ideology, as it were, around the globe. Now word comes out of India and Pakistan that ISIS is declaring another new caliphate location, which they call the province of Hind. Now, this is a region that sort of spans parts of India and Pakistan, maybe even part of Afghanistan. There's some interesting history behind this. This region was once called Khorasan. And take a look at this ISIS recruiting video I found online that talks about the importance of Khorasan, that area.
Now, the Prophet, peace be upon him, said an army would march from Khorasan carrying black banners, and they will march onto Al-Quds, defeating those in their way, and they will give victory, they will give support and assistance to who? To Imam Mahdi. They will make the way easy for Imam Mahdi. As we said, where is Khorasan today? In Iran, Afghanistan. We find that an army has appeared in the land of Khorasan. And what banner do they carry? Do they carry the banner of nationalism or Arabism? No. What flag do we find the Mujahideen flying today? The black banner of Tawheed. All of the Mujahideen forces carrying this black banner of Tawheed. And they will march from Afghanistan onto Al-Quds, granting victory and assistance to Imam Mahdi. Now, if we were to say this was possible 20 years ago, You would laugh. How can you march from Afghanistan unto Al-Quds? You're going to face the governments of so many countries. Yet look at what's taking place today. You find Palestine is in a state of war. Next door in Syria is in a state of war. Syria, you can walk in and walk out. To get across the borders, it's no problem. From Syria to Iraq, Iraq is also in a state of war. The borders are uncontrolled. You can walk straight through. There's only one country in between Iraq and Afghanistan, and that is Iran.
All right, so you need to remember that ISIS is a Sunni organization, and Iran is Shia. So ISIS sees Iran as an enemy. So these ISIS muftis that made this video think Iran is gonna have to go away, or at least get really busy with a war with the United States so that they'll be too occupied otherwise to stop the ISIS armies from marching from Afghanistan into Iraq, which they call Al-Quds. Now, Indian and Pakistani security forces say there is no new caliphate beginning in their countries. So all this is probably just propaganda, but ISIS has proven that propaganda can be powerful, and it can carry out or at least motivate attacks on churches and other places from the Philippines, Egypt, Sri Lanka, and Europe, and that's just this year. And there have been some pretty massive terror attacks in India as well, though not all of them are attributed to Muslim extremists. But I mean, I'd say probably at least 400 people a year have died in terrorist incidents in India, and there have been probably four major attacks there this year alone. Now, one of the things that we learned from the Mumbai terror attacks, which happened 11 years ago, carried out by Muslim extremists, they killed almost 200 people and injured hundreds more. And that these kind of attacks are the hardest ones to combat, that we'd call them massive multi-cell terror attacks. And that's where a team of terrorists sort of coordinates together to hit multiple locations at once to create mass chaos and confusion and bring a city to its knees, which makes it really difficult for emergency services to get around in the traffic. 9/11 was the ultimate massive multi-cell attack. One of the things we learned from that was that the U.S. needs a separate cell network specifically for first responders, since common cell networks get obviously overwhelmed in times of crisis. And we have that now. So think about it. Emergency personnel from dozens of different state, local, and federal agencies, all converging on an emergency in one city. Each of those guys with different tactics, techniques, procedures, different radio frequencies, different levels of training, and all trying to address the same event. It can be a huge cluster gaggle, and we've seen how that inability to seamlessly work together has cost lives from Mumbai to Miami to Parkland, San Bernardino, other places as well. Well, a friend of mine who's a legend in the Special Forces community, they called him Redbeard, he decided to try and do something about that. He started a training center called DARCY, the Direct Action Resource Center. Check it out.
In the wake of continuing terror attacks around the world, it's clear international terrorists are evolving to use ever more spectacular and brutal tactics. Coordinated attacks on multiple locations can quickly bring entire cities to a standstill and represent a nightmare scenario for any law enforcement agency. Just outside Little Rock, Arkansas, law enforcement professionals from across the country come to this 700-acre facility to find better ways to respond to such attacks. The Direct Action Resource Center, known as DARCY, has been developing counterterrorism techniques for two decades and offers a special course several times each year for law enforcement. Former Green Beret Rich Mason is the founder.
DARCY was started in 1996 as a way for special operation type forces, law enforcement and military, to get it kind of off campus, away from the flagpole, and do really focused, cost-effective training. DARCY focuses mostly on things like urban warfare, counterterrorism, things along those lines. So we have ranges for everything from sniper to pistol. You know, we do concealed carry, low visibility operations, explosive breaching, things like that.
The Law Enforcement Counterterrorism course brings in cops from all different agencies and throws them together in a chaotic, hyper-realistic scenario from day one.
This course is designed to defeat a multi-cell attack, similar to Paris, but actually worse in scale.
One of the things that makes DARCY training so effective is that they have the cops bring their same equipment that they would take on their real calls. So the SWAT guys bring their same body armor, the same helmets, gas masks, and even weapons. And there's one important difference, though, and that's this little
blue bolt that goes in their weapon while they're here. This is modified to only fire plastic bullets. The reason why that's important is because the OP4 or opposing forces here are all live guys, and they're shooting back at you with these same plastic bullets. Now, this isn't paintball. These things really hurt. And the point is, when you get hit, you know it. That makes the training painful, but very realistic.
Yeah, this training is very important because it puts everything in a context for law enforcement. The aggressive nature of something like a lone wolf attack with multiple guys, a multi-cell attack, is different than day-to-day, I guess what they call routine law enforcement operations, even for tactical units.
It's mass chaos initially because you're going to get reports coming from a bunch of different directions about a bunch of different issues occurring.
Mike Cowan is a Memphis cop who has been to Darcy several times.
There are not enough tactical guys on one team to respond to a major event like what we saw in Paris. So we would have to integrate together. And so having the opportunity to train and learn these tactics and then be able to teach these tactics so that we can all be on the same sheet is why we're here.
This is a training you can't get anywhere else.
Lieutenant Chris Amling is a sheriff's deputy in Pulaski County, Arkansas.
When you have a guy that is actively trying to hurt you, and it's not for play, I mean, it's real life, you put a lot more into it, you take your time, your breathing goes up. I mean, everything, it feels real. It really does.
The scenarios keep changing and getting more chaotic throughout the course, and that's done on purpose to keep these guys guessing and make the value of the training even higher.
You know, you have everything from suicide vests to being shot at, you know, it's kind of a full spectrum of violence we're able to simulate for the law enforcement entities that come out here.
And cops are lining up for the training, many taking vacation time and spending their own money to be here because they understand what's at stake.
I mean, it happens here in the States, and we have to prepare for that and be ready for it, whether it's ISIS or whether it's homegrown terrorism. We've got to get this training, we've got to put it on our guys, and we've got to make this real world experience happen right now.
With the next attack likely a matter of when, not if, these men are spending lots of late nights at Darcy, making sure they'll be ready.
Knowledge is power, absolutely. The more you know, the more you've experienced, it definitely gives you an edge.
From Little Rock, Arkansas, I'm Chuck Holton for CBN News.
So we need to be careful to never allow ourselves to take for granted the men and women who give their all to protect us. And they do so day in and day out while you're working, while you're sleeping. And they do it for too little pay. And in reality, we couldn't afford to pay them what they're really worth. But respect doesn't cost anything. And they should have all the respect that we have to offer. So that's it for today's podcast. Thanks for watching. We've got a lot more really good stuff coming up later on this week and next week. I got a great interview last night that you're going to love when I bring that out. So stay tuned. Thanks for watching. I'm Chuck Holton, and this is The Hot Zone.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.